Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. Episode 2437, if you can believe that, of The Tom Woods Show with our old friend Adam Curry. You remember Adam Curry if you grew up in the 80s like I did. And if for some reason you don't, type in Adam Curry in Google, and there's a particular picture of him with his hair that will jog your memory. And I found out on this show that he hosted Headbangers Ball at a time when, at least the beginning, he didn't know anything about metal at all. Had us all fooled. But since then, he's become a podcasting pioneer on many levels and is himself, of course, the co-host of the No Agenda Show with John C. Dvorak. So welcome back, Adam.
Tom, it's always good to be here. Whenever I get a Twitter DM from you, because that's how we communicate, I'm always like, oh man, Tom Woods, he still remembers me. Yes, I'd love to come on the show. Good to see you. Now, weren't you in St. Croix when I saw you last?
I was in St. Croix. And then one time, I forget what year it was, but not too long ago, I was not too far from you and we took you out for lunch.
That's right, in Austin. That's right. And it was funny because someone took a picture of us and I had like a knife in my pocket. When you go to Austin, you got to have a knife.
I didn't even notice.
Oh, it was big scrutiny on like, whoa, what kind of knife is Curry carrying? Man, Tom Woods must be a dangerous character.
That is something else. You know, before we go into the meat of what's going on in the world today, are you more or less out of the entertainment world to the point where, like, do you still have friends from those days? Or is that just like a closed chapter of the book of your life?
Well, I mean, the entertainment world, I think, you're in the entertainment world. I mean, what is entertainment these days? I'll tell you what it's not. It's not the Golden Globes. I mean, that's not the entertainment world to me anymore. But, and, you know, I still talk to lots of people from time to time. In fact, just 2 weeks ago, Rudy Sarzo, remember Rudy Sarzo? He was the Cuban Hurricane bass player for Whitesnake, for Dio, he played with Ozzy.
Out loud, yeah.
A lot of these guys still tour around. And so I talked to Rudy, Rudy's got to be close to 70 and he's cut, man. I mean, he looks fantastic. And I said, Rudy, what you doing, man? He says, I'm a merchant of memories, Adam. Said, when people come to see me play, and he's now playing with a version of Dio, he said, they just want to have a great show. They want to remember those days. I'm a merchant of memories. So guys like that, you know, I definitely still talk to for sure.
Well, I'm going to tell you a couple things related to this. So this is episode 2437, episode number 3 of the Tom Woods Show. It's only been downhill from there, was Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull. I got him on episode 3, you know?
Nice, nice.
So then the other thing is, now, and then I promise we'll talk about things that everybody wants to listen to about, but I genuinely do listen to all kinds of music. Most of the time people say, I listen to all kinds of music. You play them some death metal and they say, okay, I admit I don't listen to that. Okay, but I genuinely do listen to all kinds of music. But the kind that most people would not think I would listen to is, I really can appreciate the abilities and the melodic writing abilities of a Barry Manilow. Even though he's like adult contemporary, the fact is those melodies are really great. So I've now twice seen him perform in Las Vegas. Of all the shows I've seen, I mean, I've seen the most extreme metal you can imagine. I've seen all kinds of shows. This guy at age 80 is so full of energy and he's still got probably 85% of his voice. He's not playing it safe. He's playing songs that are hard vocally on him, and he is just absolutely kicking ass every single night. And for some reason, it wasn't just an enjoyable evening. That was uplifting for me as a guy who's advancing in age to see that he's doing what he loves and he's more full of energy than you can imagine. It's a far better show than you have any right to expect.
So right off the bat, I'm disappointed you didn't invite me to that show because I would have loved to have seen that. I've never seen Barry Manilow. I loved him because he was a jingle writer. I mean, he wrote a lot of commercials. I write the songs, of course, but there's this medley that he does of all the commercials. I think he might have even written that You Deserve a Break Today from McDonald's. I mean,
he definitely wrote Like a Good Neighbor, State
right.
Farm.
Yep.
That's him, yeah. He says, that's my biggest hit. That's been on for like 50 years.
And that's talent. I mean, to write commercial jingles is a real talent. What's interesting that you bring that up, I've been working on podcasting 2.0 for the past 3 years, which includes an online, real-time payment mechanism. And we just kind of opened this up to artists. And artists who have been, and I've been out of music radio for a long, long time. And it's just like, wasn't listening to music much at all. Worship music in the church maybe, but otherwise not really listening to music much. So we now have these artists coming in who are completely disillusioned by the music business, have had 10 million streams on Spotify, made no money. And so now they're actually making money. And what it's done is it's brought me back into music. And what I realized, I knew it inherently, but I kind of forgotten about it. If you hear a song three times, as long as it's not total crap, you will be humming along with it. I forgot how important repetition is, that, you know, when you have top 40 radio or any type of radio that just repeats a hit over and over again. It doesn't have to be Taylor Swift. In fact, preferably not. But it can be Ainsley Costello. And all of a sudden, like, I'm humming these songs. And it's like I've been rebirthed into a new world of music, which is really exciting and teaches me that the entertainment business, we're kind of leaving the mainstream behind, as you were just talking about it. There's a whole new entertainment business, which is flourishing.
Well, and I like clever alternative ways of monetizing things. And especially in this day and age where, as you say, a lot of people are listening to music through streaming services. They're not buying the physical album anymore. And by the way, we all love the convenience of the streaming services. I still do kind of feel like something's been lost, because in the old days when I used to listen to music that was before my time, I'd go to the record store and I'd look at all those beautiful old Yes album covers. And the cover made me wonder what was inside. You know,
packaging,
I would get Tales
baby.
From Topographic Oceans. I want to open it up. You know what I mean?
It was packaging. I mean, it was an important part of the experience. I mean, we may have discussed this before, but Peter Frampton Comes Alive, the double album, that's what we cleaned our seeds on with our weed. I mean, that was a seminal record that we had to have. But definitely the cover art, the liner notes, and of course that deteriorated quickly with CDs. That's when we lost a lot of that. And I'd say the worst part of really the marketing and packaging of music, which was beautiful in our day, come up on my knee, kid, I'll tell you, I wasn't like in my day, was when they unbundled the album. And that was really, Apple said, you know what, you can buy it per song. And then, of course, it devolved down to pay one subscription and stream all you want, or listen to some ads and stream all you want. And it's really ruined the beautiful packaging and what music was as a product that we love and was a cultural experience. Because, you know, I would come to Tom Wood's house, I'd bring my albums. Like, hey, man, listen, we had suitcases for it. Remember a little case where you put all your albums fit in there perfectly? That's the kind of stuff that all went away. Now it's just, you know, is it my turn to use the Sonos? You know, that's kind of how it works today.
Right, right, right. But for those of us who really do love that, what I like is that there are some artists who also are searching around for ways to make it all pay, who will offer the super deluxe exclusive box set that you pre-order before the release comes out. And it's got the vinyl and it's got the CD and it's got the 36-page book and it's got maybe a sheet of paper from one of the set lists from a show or whatever. And it's packaged in a way that's just irresistible. Or now the past 15 years or so that you start to see VIP meet and greets at shows, again, as a way of trying to wring a little bit more out of an industry that doesn't make as many millionaires maybe as it used to. And I am all too happy to pay for that, because I feel like some of this music has enriched my life for 30 plus years. And what did I pay for it? $8.99? Yeah, sure, I'll pay $200 to say thank you to the artist.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we live in a different world. And now it's no longer that you have to be the biggest or have the most. You have to have a mechanism for the people that appreciate you to be able to support you however they want. I call it value for value. That's how we've been running our podcast for the past 16 years, which is very simple. We put everything out there, no paywalls, all of it out there. This is the value we have to provide. If it gives you any value, send it back. And you can do that with time, talent, or treasure. So we've never built our own website. We've never done any jingles or artwork. That's all time and talent that people put in. But the treasure, when you ask people to send you something at the value that they receive, you don't know. I mean, someone who sends us $5,000, which has happened, it's because that may not be a lot of money to them. It may be a lot. I don't know. $5 may be a lot. When you present it that way and you ask and you have that feedback loop, it actually turns out to even out over time, even though it's maybe only 4% of people who will send you money. It's kind of the 1,000 true fans theory. It really does work, where we just did a live concert from First Avenue, 7th Street entrance in Minneapolis. That's what was in Purple Rain, that club there. And it was with two artists who are in the value for value music world. So it was all on the modern podcast apps. And this one, I think she just turned 18-year-old singer. She's been in Nashville, disillusioned, didn't really make it the way she would have wanted to at all in the Nashville scene. In two nights, two concerts, got $7,000 from only a handful, like 1,000 people or a couple thousand people who were watching online and sending the value directly to her. No middlemen, nobody in the middle, not even me, just everything going directly from the fans who are watching and because video watching, listening directly to her. This is what excites me. Same with a podcast. You don't have to be Joe Rogan to be able to make a living or sustain your project or whatever. It's just it's a different mentality that is coming into play.
In 2020, the very beginning of March, so just as the COVID stuff was hitting, one of my favorite bands is from Finland, somewhat obscure, but unjustly so, a melodic death metal band called Insomnium. And they're great. They're really, really super great. Their music gives me a lot of pleasure. And they came to the U.S. and they were ready to start their American tour. And they went to Philadelphia. They played a show in Philadelphia. And then every show had to be canceled. And so all the things they had to prepay for to make this thing work, all of that they had to forfeit. So they wrote this absolutely heartrending letter to fans, basically saying, this is probably the end of the band because we're completely ruined at this point, unless we can come up with 50 grand. And for us, given that we're in such a niche corner of the world, there's no way we don't make that kind of money. Adam, I think you know how this turns out. Within one day, the fan base had more than it had exceeded that, even though, as you say, in this case, it was a small fan base, but a dedicated one. And so just like that, it turned them around. And now they're doing an American tour finally. But they went through Europe and they picked it right back up and they were all just flabbergasted.
I'm going to have to send you a link to this great podcast. It's a music podcast called Lightning Thrashes. I think it'll be right up your alley. You're going to dig this music. This is the kind of music Tom Woods likes to rock out to. You will like it and you will support these artists. I'm telling you, you're going to dig it, man.
All right. I can't wait to get it. All right. Let's look ahead now. 2024. I'm not going to ask you for predictions because I don't know. Everybody's got a prediction, but that's like talking about, you know, what dream did you have last night? It doesn't matter to me. But white pills, you know, like sources of hope. Do you have any, as you look ahead to the new year, any sources of hope, anything that makes you happy, hopeful, look to the future with something other than dread?
Well, last year, actually, I witnessed God, so I became a Christian, and I became very white-pilled in a way. So to me,
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting that that happened to me. That was unexpected. So I have actually a lot of hope, and I see quite a revival taking place in the world. Geopolitically, I think what people are missing is that there is a much larger play unfolding before us. And it's really, the BRICS didn't matter until the BRICS mattered. And that's what we're seeing now in the Red Sea with Egypt becoming a BRICS member. And Russia has the presidency of the BRICS. So there will be lots of pains and groans still ahead. But in general, I've never felt more enthusiastic about humanity itself. We just have to keep ourselves in check. You and I have talked about this a lot in the past, particularly social media. I mean, none of that is really good. But I think as people withdraw more from those types of networks and look more towards their local communities, I'm seeing good things. You know, I live in Fredericksburg, Texas now, which is small, but I'm just seeing how people are realizing that all politics is local and we may not be able to fix what's going on, what we're told to be worried about and looking at continuously. And as I said, you know, you can go really big into BRICS versus the dollar and the Western countries to what can I do in my own community? How can I make my city council better? How can I hold them accountable? How can I work on my children's education in our local town? I think people are starting to understand that. And I'm just seeing more and more of it. And so with that, I have a lot of hope. I really do.
Is it too personal for me to ask you about the circumstances of your religious experience?
No. Oh, no, not at all. In fact, I'm very happy. I talked about it on Joe Rogan almost a year ago, and that kind of went viral. So it was interesting to see what the response was from that. I'd been getting nudges for a long time, and my wife and I both were kind of feeling this. And I looked up one day, and I look around like, all these guys I'm working with are Christians. You know, what's wrong? And I'd talked to them about Christianity before, and they're always happy to answer me. And I decided, you know what? I've looked at all the conspiracy theories, moon landing, 9/11, JFK, you name it. I'm going to look at this thing, this God and Jesus. Let me dive into this. I do research. I know how to do it. And so I dove in and I started reading books like Evidence That Demands a Verdict, A Case for Heaven. And within 2 weeks, I went, there's more evidence here that God is real, Jesus is real, it all happened, than any of the other stuff I believe in. You know, I know Building 7 didn't fall down out of sympathy for Building 1 and 2. So there's all this stuff that I've researched. And for me, it was obvious. I've read so, there's a lot you can read, and there's a lot of variations. And then when I started to pray and I saw the power of prayer, that was it. I mean, and by the way, you know, when you believe that Jesus died for our sins, you do get to forget all that stuff. You know, it's like all the bad things, I can put that all behind me and look forward. So that was very appealing to me. And I really, it's given me a new lease on life. It really has. It's been amazing what has happened since that time.
Wow. Well, okay.
You didn't expect that, did you, Tom Woods?
I did not expect. Well, I mean, now I feel kind of guilty not seeing you on Rogan, but I never watch it. And not because it's not good, but because I don't have the attention span. You know, I need the little clips on Twitter. You know, that's what I need.
Nobody can watch every episode of Rogan. That's impossible. Nobody can.
But he's so good at what he does, and the people he brings on and the topics he's willing to have sincere conversations about. I mean, he deserves his positive notoriety. I mean, he's really earned it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is one of the kindest, most giving, most gracious men I know. I mean, he is just a nice guy. And I've been on his show 4 or 5 times. And it's interesting, you know, you go on Rogan, you get these, what I call JTs or TJs. Tell Joe this. Tell Joe he should have this person on. Tell Joe this. Yeah. I get that with you too, by the way. It's like, yeah, you got to tell Tom. So, you know, people know that I'm into Bitcoin. So they'll be like, man, you got to tell Joe, he's got to have this guy on. You got to talk about Bitcoin. You got to orange pill him. And once I came out as a Christian, like, dude, we got to bring Joe to God. We got to give him a Bible, tell him to have this pastor on. I'm like, let me tell you something. Joe Rogan is more Christian than most non-Christians I know. He has everything in him except for that final step. But he is just a super, super nice guy. And he deserves everything that he gets. He really does. And he's doing fantastic work because he's gotten into this, or he's been positioned where he can touch third rails. And he can open up difficult conversations that people will get visceral reactions to. And I think as the world, we're blessed to have him do what he does. And you're right. It's not everyone is watching or listening to his show, but it's clips. And, you know, there's a deal with Spotify and YouTube. So that's how some of it gets out there, 15-minute bits in there and some stuff on X. But he is an incredibly important part of a universe that, for me, it's just good. It really is. It's just good. Stuff he does is good, and it's good for humanity.
And he builds, I mean, obviously he has a lot of people of very great prominence on the show, but other times he has people half the world hasn't heard of. And he elevates their platforms just like that, and and it can be life-changing for those people and for everybody listening. So I'm all in favor.
What people probably don't know is that he determines who comes on the show. He doesn't have, you know, a staff that is just saying, oh, this guy or that guy. He'll read someone's book or he'll hear about something and then he'll have that person on. It's all him. There's no great scheme behind it about who's being invited. That is what Joe is actually interested in.
Well, it's, as it happens, how the Tom Woods Show works too, but it's probably
of course,
what most
but people think differently often, you know?
So what do you think about, because, I mean, it's just speaking of Joe Rogan, what do you think about RFK Jr.? What's your opinion of him?
Well, I've been following him since the moment he came on the scene. Very interesting because, of course, he's saying a lot of things that I agree with. You know, there's a few things that I don't agree with, but obviously how he looks at capture of agencies within the federal government, how he looks at the big pharma, the military-industrial complex, all of these things I find myself in a lot of agreement with. What is interesting is his stance on the CIA, of course, knowing what happened to his family. I mean, he's touching third rails here. I mean, it's obvious that, you know, when you're controversial and your last name is Kennedy, things can go horribly wrong. So I think it's very brave and interesting what he's doing. What I hear him say, I kind of like. Everyone has someone behind them. And Dvorak and I jokingly call him Bobby the Op, because, you know, like, is this guy an, is he a psyop somehow? Is there something going on? And I think that there's factions inside our government, certainly the CIA, who are old school and hate what's become of the agency, which is, you know, just murderous, treacherous bunch of dicks. It's unbelievable how horrible some of these agencies, particularly the CIA, have become. And that, you know, he says, I'm going to reorganize, I'm going to clean it up. And that would be good, because the CIA, in my mind, is nothing more than the arm of the government that goes out for the military-industrial complex, starts some wars, so then we go in and, you know, and then we spend all our money on it. And then after that, we rubbleize the place. Then we send back the rest of our industry to go and rebuild it. I mean, in that regard, we need a total, total reset. And I like him. Something happened, and, you know, obviously the Democrats shunned him and just really made him go independent. I have no idea if he'll be able to even make a dent in things. I think he's on the ballot in Utah, but I'd love to hang out with him. Seems like a nice guy. I mean, he's overcome some interesting challenges in his life, including severe drug and alcohol addiction. He's a Christian. So there's a lot of things I like about him, but I don't know if he's the guy that America needs at this season of our existence.
Well, has Adam Curry decided on whether such a guy is available? I mean, that is to say, is there anybody you are endorsing? I mean, even if not formally?
Well, I don't think I didn't. The last person I endorsed was Ron Paul.
Okay.
And that was quite a while ago. And that kind of ended my endorsement career.
But do you have any rooting interest in any of them?
Well, from a show perspective, this is how I usually look at it. Anyone would be great. I mean, Biden would be the worst if he was reelected, because he, you know, he's boring. I mean, it's, we can't get good clips unless they jack him up with adrenochrome or whatever they're giving him. Then he's funny and he says weird things. Personally, I think Trump is going to be president. I can just tell you that right now. I think the Democrats want him to be president. I think the whole establishment wants him to be president, because we're going to have a financial issue. There's no doubt about it. I believe banking and money drives everything. So they need to print up a whole bunch of money. We know that Trump is very susceptible to that. It's like, oh, you know, let's print up some money for stimulus checks, et cetera. You know, it turned out to be probably $7 trillion. Let's give two to Biden, but, you know, between $4 and $5 trillion. No political party really wants to have their guy as president when it hits the fan. And I think we're due for that. I mean, I don't see rubble in the streets, but if you really ask me what I'm saying here is, we're going to have a financial event and we're kind of out of options other than create a central bank digital currency. So now we can manage, the Federal Reserve can manage printing and destruction of money at an individual level. I mean, that's the only way out I see, because there's everything else is just points to problems. I also believe COVID, forget about what virus we had or didn't have, the lockdowns, everything was all driven by finances. I mean, you know what happened just before that. You saw what was going with the reverse repos. The banking system was stuck. They've been, you know, we kept interest rates down since 2008. I mean, they're running out of ideas. They're running out of ways to do it. You know, a house that was $500,000 3 years ago is now $1 million. I mean, you can't deny what has happened. Yeah, certainly you and, you know, your knowledge of financial systems, you can't deny what has happened here. You can't fix it. They have to keep on doing it. And I think the only way is to make it all completely digital. So what better guy to have than Trump, who will, I think he would stop wars. That's the good thing. But I think they have, they, and I say they, you know, big money and big banking and money creation, whoever's behind the Federal Reserve, which we don't actually know, I think they would like to have a guy like him in to, and he probably would be on board with it. He's a macro guy more than anyone realizes. We have to do something. That's the only obvious way out. I don't see any other possibility. So I think he will be president for all those reasons. And domestic policy doesn't even matter. In fact, bankers like immigration. They want more people. As long as you have a growing population, which we have because of predominantly illegal immigration, we win. That's literally how they talk. We beat China. Their population is shrinking. We beat them, not because we're making more children here, but because we have more people coming in. That's why it's all taking place. It's all about how much money can we print based upon necessity of the population.
Well, if I were a real schemer on the other side, I could see a couple of reasons that your reasoning about Trump would make sense for them. Like one would be, we wouldn't be able to convince the general public to go along with these financial innovations that we think we need. But this guy could. If we try to do it, there'll be a riot. But if he tells them it's what we need, he's got tens of millions of people who just say, oh, okay, well, he tells us. So that's one thing. The other thing is, but if it all still turns out badly, well, then he's the fall guy. So it's a win, win, win. All around.
Win-win. Yeah. Win-win. Yeah. But so for the show, he's, I don't like how he communicates. This is what I love about Vivek. I think, I'm pretty sure he's working for Trump. I mean, he's, make him vice president, make him the communicator, whatever. This guy, I mean, he's just come into his own with communication skills and kindness and how he just has a way, he has a way of doing it that is extraordinary. Trump's communication skills are horrible. I mean, it's grating. It's not good. It's funny. I do like the jokes. And I think we're going to see a lot of great use of so-called AI, which seems to only work for humor. That's the only thing it's really good at. I think that we'll see a lot of that leading up to the election. I'm excited about that because it's funny. I'm just looking to make people's lives lighter and funnier while we explain what's really going on. I don't think RFK Jr. has a place in that anymore. And he has a huge disadvantage with his medical affliction. I mean, that sucks. That really sucks for the guy. If he had a voice that worked better, and he can't help it. I mean, it's just what it is. Then it may be a different story. But it sucks for that guy because no, that's just a non-starter. You got to have a voice. And that's literally what he is lacking.
And the thing is, you could listen to him on Rogan for extended periods of time.
Sure.
And realize how much knowledge he has that is just coming off the top of his head.
Have you read his books? Have you read his book about Fauci?
Book about Fauci. Absolutely. It's somewhere amazing. On one of these shelves here. But on the other hand, to me, the thing he's lacking more than his voice is he just hasn't got enough of a sense of humor. I mean, it can't be intense all the time. It can't be 20-minute lectures about NATO and Ukraine all the time.
But when you see him, like he's been on a couple of black podcasts, really from the black podcasters. And he's cracking up with them. He definitely has the humor, but it's a two-way street. You know, and Joe went real serious with him because it was about the Fauci book, etc. He does have a sense of humor. And also, I mean, the fact that he can even exist with, because his wife, Cheryl, I mean, she's part of Hollywood, you know, hasn't been deplatformed and broken down into small bits and pieces is quite amazing. The Democrat Party just completely screwed that guy. So, I mean, how hard is it, you know, to be a third? When is the last time we had a third party candidate win the presidency? Was that Lincoln? How long ago was it?
Yeah, I mean, when we did have third parties in the past, a lot of times these were really big third parties.
Yes.
I don't know that there's a big enough movement behind RFK. A lot of people like him, but then you have a lot of people who will say, as they say every 4 years, this is the most important election of our lifetimes and we can't afford to throw our vote away on so-and-so.
Democracy's on the ballot, Tom. Oh no, democracy's at stake here. You better be careful, whatever that means.
Did you see this Bloomberg headline from just the other day saying that in 2024, 40% of humanity will be voting in elections and that's bad for democracy? I'm not making that headline up. That is the headline.
Oh, right. No, it's because there's about 40, I think I understand, there's about 40 elections around the world that'll be taking place in 2024.
Oh, man, that's what it is. Yeah.
I think that, yeah.
That, and
I think
that's bad for democracy.
Of course it is. It
might not come out the right way.
No, you voted. Well, listen, when the European Union was putting things together, they had the Lisbon Treaty. And I was living there at the time. So the Lisbon Treaty was a follow-up to the Maastricht Treaty. So this was really kind of the constitution of the United States of Europe, even though when you read it and you read in the protocols, I mean, it's pretty bad. So I think it was the Netherlands and Ireland, they voted no. You only need one country to say no. And they literally went to Ireland and went, you voted wrong. We're doing a do-over. And they made him vote again. And then they, okay, I guess I wanted to vote this. It was crazy. I mean, you didn't understand democracy when I asked the question again. And all they told you was, everyone will have the same passport, so there'll be no borders, and you'll have the same money. Bro, the destruction, the converting to the euro, I was there. Inflation was 100% overnight, especially from the Dutch guilder. I mean, a cup of coffee, which went for two guilders or 175, within a month, all of a sudden was three guilders. It was crazy. And people just went, oh, okay, whatever, because they were told that's what you want to do. That's good. And now all of Western Europe is overrun with asylum seekers. I mean, I've seen this happen throughout the last 20 years. And you know, this is why, coming back to that headline, you see Geert Wilders in the Netherlands, you see far right wing politicians, who are very dangerous, who are rising up because the people are sick of it. People are sick and tired of it. The Netherlands, which I have the most knowledge of, having grown up there, is a socialist country. It worked okay until it didn't. If you let everybody come in who's going to take advantage of your socialist systems, it doesn't work in the long run. And so people go and say, hey, this guy who says he's going to stop it, I'll vote for him. This is why immigration, I think, is the only thing that matters. Everyone could talk about democracy and whatever, but anyone who says, look, we got to stop what's going on, no matter what country you're in, people will go for that.
Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Persist SEO. If you are getting buried by your competition online, then build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO. If you are a small local business trying to compete against large companies in the service industry, then increase your visibility with Persist SEO. What if you have low or no leads coming in on a consistent basis? Well, then website search engine and conversion optimization can help move the needle to a more prosperous business model for you. Are you tired of cold calling and networking, meeting places getting shut down? Use your website as a lead generation engine. Or what if you're not showing up for your services in the search engines? Well, get found with Persist SEO's expert search engine optimization. All you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. Your No Agenda show, as you say, has been on for 16 years, which has to be some kind of a record in this novel little industry that you and I occupy. You know, as with anything, there's always attrition. People come, they listen to you for a while, maybe they go off and do something else. So you always have to keep refreshing the audience. I mean, sometimes they die. So you got to refresh the audience.
Yeah.
So what do you do to keep your audience refreshed? Do you make any active attempt to say, we're going to try this social media method or strategy, or do you just put the shows out there and let the chips fall where they may?
We have absolutely no strategy. We have no meetings. We have no organization. Dvorak and I, we don't even talk in between shows. We don't discuss what topics we're coming to the table with. It's just like you and I. And that is fresh. Every single Thursday, every single Sunday, there's no video. And you buckled, Tom. There's no video.
I love how old school you are. I really respect how old school you are.
And mainly because first of all, who wants to see us? Second of all, it's a pain in the butt. You know, it's all this extra work. You know, we have some family members who help us on the back end with admin. That's about it. Here's the key to a successful podcast. Release on the same day that you release on, whether it's every day, once a week, once every 2 weeks, once a month, doesn't matter. Release on the same day, approximately the same time, because people get accustomed. They start to schedule their lives around you. This is very important. The second one is because there's 4.3 million podcasts really active, about 400,000. It's much less than you think that are really, really active. Yeah. We have an opt-in mailing list. I think our list is 30, 35,000. It's not very big compared to what we think is about a million people who listen. We think, no one really knows. And we do a newsletter the day before every show. Every single day before the show, we're going to send a newsletter, and we try to put as little actual content in there as possible because people aren't looking for that. They want a reminder. Oh, that's right. The show's coming tomorrow, and we always say, and please support us, because if you don't support us, then we'll have to go find something else to do. Now, we find other ways to say that, of course, but that's all you need to do is remind people to support the show, to listen to the show. Now, do we have people falling off? Yeah. We call it overboard. People sometimes come back, sometimes they don't. We have done exactly the same with the same guys Now, we've changed as humans, of course. You just do throughout life. I mean, Dvorak is now on my third wife, which and the final one. So there's been a lot of changes throughout the 16 years. But that's it. We're the same guys. What we did see during COVID, we probably saw almost a doubling of the audience. And that was purely because people were looking for something else. And as gruesome as it all seemed to be, we were kind of having fun with it. You know, it's like, because you can have fun with a lot of the things that were taking place. And it was primarily women who came. It was like the mama bears came out and said, okay, I know what they're telling me. What do these guys say? Do they have something I can, is there something here that I'm interested in? And I know, Tom, that you've gotten these emails. Thank you so much. During COVID, you kept me sane.
Yes.
I know almost every single podcaster who has been around and is doing their job gets those emails. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You saved my sanity. Some say you saved my life. I disagree with that, but thank you. You kept me sane is the most frequently thing I hear. And that's because that's what we do. We have that connection. We have a relationship with the people on the other side. And it's not just, you know, we're not traditional broadcasters. Like I'm here, I'm on the soundstage, I'm in the studio, I do my thing, I'm gone, I get my check and whatever, I'll do it again for him tomorrow. This is my life. This is all I do. This is what Dvorak does. And we do that together. And it's a marriage of convenience. We probably don't even like each other that much, but it works so well on the show because we come from different places in life. He's a little bit older than I am. So it all works together very well. And there's people that really dislike me and like him and vice versa. And I think that's part of the magic as well. I mean, it is definitely a magic between two guys who just happen to be able to have a conversation that you want to listen to.
I would say my subscriber list, the number of people on that is proprietary, but it's a pretty good size because mm-hmm. I have an email newsletter and that doubled during COVID.
I bet it did.
But I don't think the podcast audience did. It went up somewhat because people encountered me through a couple of big talks I gave that were then, of course, taken down. But mm-hmm. too late, I already got their email addresses because right. I gave away a free ebook about what was going on with COVID and they all yes. wanted it. And so that they would, so their experience with me was getting an email newsletter from me on a regular basis, not listening to me. So mm-hmm. I've tried to tell these people, there is also a show, you know, but,
yeah.
but the other thing, I did get the emails you're talking about, but the other thing I got though, other than the uplifting emails of, oh, it was so difficult, but at least I had your voice. And that's really nice. I got the tragic stories too, because they had nobody else they could tell because Tom Brokaw doesn't care about that, you know, your life was ruined by the lockdowns. No one cares. No one wants to talk about that. That's not a fashionable disability to have. So they told me.
Yeah, and so we would read those things on the show. We would read that stuff on the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
And people were like, okay, so I don't want this shot. I'm going to lose my job. You know, a lot of people were looking at religious exemptions. Then there was, hey, I got this and I don't feel good about it. I mean, it was all variations. And we weren't pushing one thing or the other. I can tell you that wasn't for me. I didn't accept that into my life. Easy for me to say. There was a lot of heartbreak. And we as a world have not even come to terms with that. We're all still incredibly traumatized. Whether you went through it, sailed through it or not, there's trauma. This is the one thing that we will, as a world, and definitely as a country, have to come to terms with eventually. What just happened? What happened? I mean, we can't gloss over that because you're right. The stories that you heard and people that sent notes to you about that, that wasn't on CBS or NBC or ABC. The tragedy, the families that broke apart because of strife and anger internally that was spurred on by our president. I'm talking about Joe Biden. I mean, it was horrible, really horrible things. That bothers me a lot. I mean, and we're going to have to come to terms with it somehow. Everyone has to. And what it can't be, oh, now you agree with me? Well, I hate you. I'm never going to forgive you. It can't be that. We have to forgive. You don't have to reconcile, but we have to forgive because it screws your own head up if you don't forgive people for how they acted. It was like a giant Milgram experiment.
Yeah, yeah, it really was. It really was. I don't want to really toot my own horn when I have a guest on, but I'm going to do a little toot of a small horn here because I eventually decided that I had a pile of these stories. And I went back and asked these people, I think I'm going to put together a book of just these stories. Do you want yours in there? Not one person said no. Every single one of them, they just wanted someone to hear it. They just wanted to be heard. So when I came out with my recent book, I also released a companion volume that's just their stories.
Oh, wow. So I didn't know that.
It's called Collateral Damage. And by the way, my initial title for the book was COVID Stories. And I told that to Michael Malice. And he said, Tom, that title sucks. You got to come up with something else.
I didn't want to say it, but yeah, Malice is right in
that one.
Yeah, that's
not a good title. So, but Collateral Damage is a good... So on my COVID website, diaryofcovid.com, I should give that book away for free. So worth checking out. So No Agenda Show, is it .net?
Yes, it is. Well, I mean, we probably have 140 different domain names. I mean, if you want BigMike2024.com, just people register weird stuff and it forwards to our website. But noagendashow.net is it, or just any podcast app and look for No Agenda and it'll show up there. I do recommend, by the way, modern podcast apps, because the legacy ones, they can drop your favorite podcast. The ones that you get at podcastapps.com, they will not deplatform anybody. So I subscribe to the Tom Woods Show in Podcast Guru. That's the one I'm using right now. If Apple or someone else decides to kick you off, it won't get kicked off of those. So that's part of the legacy we'll be leaving.
I hope people will check out the No Agenda Show. We are, in a sense, in competition with each other, but a very, very, very friendly competition.
I don't see it that way. I mean, we love it. You know, we had this something called the Tom Woods Donation. Have you heard about this?
I have not.
Oh, so people will donate to the show because we read above $200, we read the notes and they get an associate executive producer credit, above $300 executive producer credit. And people will be like, this is a Tom Woods donation. I heard you on Tom Woods. And they just want to, so they donate to the show, they support us, they promote you, and they have a connection like, oh, this is Tom Woods donation. I think we have a jingle for it somewhere too.
That is amazing. I am so happy that my people are so generous. If they feel are. Like people, if you want to send in an Adam Curry donation, I'll read that.
Yes, please do.
Out loud.
It's funny. That is, I mean, so great. It does work cross podcast that way. And people will call it that because they heard about, and that's really how podcasts work. People think that you have to have this discovery or, you know, oh, we got to put it all up in YouTube to catch the algos. No, it comes from someone you trust who says, you know, you should check this podcast out.
Yeah.
That's how you get quality people to show up to your podcast. And it does require, luckily, I'm fortunate enough to come on, you know, your show and you have guests. It requires that. Now, we don't do guests, but believe me, on Sunday, I'm like, hey, man, I'm doing Tom Woods tomorrow, so I don't know when it's going to be out, but, and you know, and we're always excited about things like that.
That's really great. I really, really do appreciate it. And I also just want to say as we part here that I think you sometimes, you're such a humble guy that you've forgotten that for most people, you're a star. And the fact that you come on my show and treat me the way you do and say things like, you know, wow, gee, Tom Woods still remembers me. Are you kidding me, you blankety blanker? I think to myself, I can't believe Adam Curry remembers me.
Well, come back to Texas, man. We should break bread again. I'd love for you to meet my wife. I wasn't really hurt, but I could have done with the Christmas invite. I mean, I don't know. I was like, oh, man. Tom,
well, you know, Adam,
you got to
give value for the Christmas invite was for financial supporters, you know?
I know.
you give a little value, you get a Christmas party.
I thought that was a really good idea, by the way. I liked that. Look at Tom Woods, man. Way to go. That was great. I saw the
pictures
people
were
posting.
That's next level stuff. You come on over for a Christmas party. That's next level.
Yeah, that's good. It's good. Very, very good. Tom, I appreciate you so much, man. Thank you for having me on once again. Thank you for being a true OG podcaster. So what will the next milestone be, 2,500?
Yeah, it's coming up soon.
What are you going to do? You going to do something special for it?
I don't know. Maybe have a cake. I don't know.
You got to celebrate these milestones, brother.
At 1,000 and at 2,000, I had huge events. I had 2,500 people at my 2,000th event.
I remember. Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
Don't let those slip by, man. People love celebrating with you. And I'm sure they'd be happy to send you a lot of value to support you. They should.
Yeah, there you go. And they can name it after Adam Curry if they want to.
Yes. Adam Curry donation. There you go.
All right. No Agenda Show. Go check it out, everybody. Thank you, Adam. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Tom. God bless.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.